www.mindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindfulmindful 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Welcome to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone, right here at WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. It's a pleasure to be with you in this hour, and that only happens because people like you, the listener, support the station. WPFW has been in existence for 48 years this month, and it's due to listener support from people like yourselves. It's 48 years of courage and commitment. We have the courage to tell the truth about authoritarianism, displacement, apartheid, genocide. Our commitment to presenting jazz and public affairs in all of its extensions, whether it's news, blues, hip hop, or house, has made us an unwavering partner with you. We are fighting for social justice and the preservation of life and culture. Join with us during this pledge drive, which will last to February 22nd, as we celebrate the 48 years of courage and commitment. Do this by donating to WPFWFM.org or calling 1-800-222-9739. You can also make your donation via Cash App at $WPFWFM or by texting WPFWFM to 801-801. Help me make my goal of this hour of $500. By doing that, you provide the support that's needed to over 100 programmers who bring you jazz and justice as we attempt together to build better communities one broadcast at a time. Our topic today, Black Panther Woman, the political and spiritual life of Erica Huggins. Erica Huggins is an educator, an activist, a former political prisoner, and and she was a member of the Black Panther Party. Dr. Mary Frances Phillips is with us today. She's the associate professor in the Department of African American Studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Her research areas include modern Black freedom struggle, Black women's studies, and Black feminism. Her new book, Black Panther Woman, The Political and Spiritual Life of Erica Huggins, documents the previously untold story of Erica Huggins' early life and her career in the Black Panther Party. This book narrates Huggins' day-to-day experience and acts of political dissent during confinement. Dr. Phillips, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm glad to be with you also. And there are many, many listeners in this hour that are familiar with Erica Huggins. But for those who aren't, can we begin with you telling us a little bit about who she is?
Yes, yes. So Erica Huggins is a Black Panther Party veteran. She's one of the longest serving members in the organization. She, you know, actually joined the organization when she was a college student at Lincoln University. She was already, you know, kind of coming into her political understanding of the world from being a student activist at Lincoln University. So she came across a magazine that had Rampers magazine that had an image of Huey P. Newton on the front cover, which he was strapped to a hospital gurney. And she was so moved by the story and the image that she decided to leave school, drive, you know, from Lincoln University to California to join the Black Panther Party. She started as a rank and file member, as every Black Panther Party member started on that level. And then she actually ascended to one of the highest ranks in the organization, ultimately becoming the director of the Black Panther Party's Oakland Community School, the last surviving community survival program of the organization. The Oakland Community School was their elementary level institution. What's unique about her story is that she was incarcerated for 2 years for a crime she didn't commit. And the book itself looks at how she survived during her incarceration, where she came out whole. She came out unbroken, if you will. And so it looks at, you know, her spiritual practices, her healing practices, really shifting our understanding and broadening, I should say, our understanding of the Panthers. Many people don't think about spirituality. They don't think about wellness practices when they think about the Black Panthers. But there's really another story. There's a more complex story about the Panthers that the book really brings to the fore.
And before we go any further, as I am in the habit of doing with our guest, I'm going to ask some basic questions of you.
Okay.
Tell me the practice of your discipline, and then lead us into what drew you to engage Erica Huggins, and how long was that undertaking?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. So, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. Before I took on the book, I had different kinds of practices. And what I mean by that is I engage in spiritual practices such as prayer. I engage in spiritual practices, you know, that centered around self-care, if you will. But it wasn't until I came across the book, or I should say came across the topic of Erica Huggins. So I was a student, graduate student at Michigan State University doing my PhD in African American Studies. And I've always been interested in the Black Panther Party. I first came across the Black Panther Party when I was actually an undergrad, taking African American history courses. And when we would get to the Panthers, it was very male-centered. You know, it wasn't a lot about the women and their experiences and their contributions. So I was curious, who are these women? What are their stories? So I kept that in the back of my head. And when I decided to pursue a PhD, I wanted that to be my subject. So I actually did, for my dissertation, I did a dual biography, and she was one of the subjects for my biography. And I got connected to her through the conference circuit. So, you know, in our world, even as a graduate student, I would participate in academic conferences, presenting my papers for my classes. And I, you know, very much got connected to a community of scholars that was studying the Panthers. And I was connected to Erica Huggins through that way. And we had our first interview when I was a graduate student working on my dissertation. And so once I finished my dissertation, turned it in, passed and got my PhD, I decided that I wanted to write a full-length biography on her. And it took me a little over 10 years to complete the manuscript.
10 years. So
Yeah.
10 years of dialogue and relationship.
Yes, absolutely. And what's interesting is that the book does so much more than the dissertation did. It's all new sources, all new material, archival documents, looking at an aspect of her life that most people don't know anything about. Many know that she was incarcerated for 2 years, but they have no idea what happened behind those bars. They have no idea the kind of Black Panther Party organizing and what that looked like among women during incarceration. And that's what the book really takes up.
And indeed it does. Erica had a very unique life. I'm sorry, Miss Huggins, I should say, had a very unique life. But you present the major thread or theme throughout her life, very early on in the book, the concept of spiritual wellness. What is that, and what's as important regarding Miss Huggins' life?
Yeah, so spiritual wellness is about making meaning when you are at your lowest, right? It's finding meaning, not just at your lowest, but really in all contexts, when we think about that. And so it's a way for Black women to feel whole in a white supremacist world that oftentimes dehumanizes us, particularly within the prison system. Right, where we're treated as less than human, where we're treated as not deserving of care and rights and justice, and to be like essentially to be treated like a human being. It's a resilient strategy, a coping mechanism to help you survive. I mean, we're in very troubled times, right? And so the book, in a lot of ways, can serve as a blueprint of a toolkit of some things that you can turn to, and everyone, for everyone that looks different, but it's about going deep within yourself, right? Turning to your inside yourself as your and looking at yourself as your own resource, right? It's an alternative to violence. It's about uplifting love. It's about making connections, building a community. And it's about, which is so important in these this political moment that we're in, is emotional regulation, right? To keep yourself well, and a mechanism for creating space within yourself in a world that's completely in chaos. And Erica did this in a number of ways. So when she was incarcerated, she lived bigger than herself. I mean, she had the state literally trying to give her the chair, give her the death penalty. And to be able to live bigger than yourself. She did this, initially, she was involved, well, she turned to yoga, she turned to meditation practices to kind of help her. Her John Huggins' mother would bring her daughter to visit her on a Saturday for an hour, as she didn't want to be broken and not fully present for her daughter. So yoga and meditation helped her do that. She also supported the other Panther women, and she was incarcerated with. One woman had arthritis, and they would all come together and practice these kind of wellness practices to take care of each other. All they had was each other, and so they would give some of the pregnant Black Panther Party women that they were incarcerated with the better parts of their food, because oftentimes food is a form of punishment in prison too. And so you they're being served bad food, they're not getting the kind of prenatal treatment or medical treatment. They're really experiencing very violent, hostile conditions, and they're turning to each other as a resource and support. And so when Erica got moved to the general population about a year later, she now expanded that spiritual wellness work that she was doing and built community with those in the general population. For example, she formed a hair salon. She, you know, built community in a way where she developed a women's bail fund for women that were, you know, getting out of prison soon, but they needed a pot of money. So she tapped into her networks to serve the needs of the women that she was incarcerated with. These are all, I argue, an extension of the spiritual wellness practices that she was engaged in during her solitary confinement.
Dr. Phillips, you've given us a fantastic overview. It's very full and robust. I promise listeners we're going to hit certain touch points here and reiterate some of these things. Spiritual as opposed to, well, not opposed to, but inclusive of religious commitments. And this speaks of Erica Huggins' early life. She's a native daughter of Washington, D.C., folks, for those of you in the immediate listening area. So what was life like for Erica Huggins as she was growing up? What was her family life like? How did it contribute to her understanding of herself and the world and what she needed to do in it?
Well, Erica talks a lot about class differences. So growing up in Washington, D.C., it was certain parts that, you know, she could see, you know, there were some class differences, right? There were, you know, people who were well off a certain area and people who were not well off in certain area. And as a young child, this was very noticeable to her. So she didn't understand, like, why are people treated differently? So that was, she talked about that a lot in our continue conversations, these class differences, and then learning how they're racialized, right? And having a very strong understanding of that. She talks about witnessing police violence and police brutality, right, of those in her community. And actually, as a young girl, stepping in and really confronting the police and telling the police to stop attacking, you know, those in the community. She had did that with her sister in one incident she talked about. And so there was, Washington, D.C. was important to her development because there was a race and class understanding and awareness that she learned coming up in Washington, D.C. Also listening to stories from her mother talk about coming up in Jim Crow South, talking about her experiences. So there was a lot of storytelling that she was also learning about in the home, her visits down south, you know, and how different her family down south lived from, you know, those in the north. And so all of these really contributed to her political awakening, her political maturity, you know, if you will. And she attended the March on Washington, right?
At age 15?
Yes, yeah. At age 15, at a very young age, against her parents' wishes. Her parents didn't want her to come because they didn't feel like it would be safe. You know, they didn't feel like their young daughter should be at the March on Washington. But she went anyway, snuck, took the, you know, traveled by herself and witnessed that. And she decided when she attended the March on Washington that she wanted to serve her community for the rest of her life. And that's what she ended. And that's what she has indeed done.
Listeners, you're listening to We the People right here at WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. I'm your host, David Whetstone. But more importantly, I always ask you to focus on our guest and topic, Dr. Mary Frances Phillips, Associate Professor in the Department of African American Studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, is talking to us about a very important person and subject, Black Panther Woman. The political and spiritual life of Erica Huggins is the topic of our conversation. We're here due to your support. In this hour, I have to raise $500. I like to exceed that. I like to do my fair share, joining 60 or more public affairs and news programmers, 100 programmers altogether when you add the music people who are providing us with the jazz part of our justice commitment. And all that is fueled by you, the listener, because for more than 48 years, you have decided to support this station. Joining me in a few moments in this hour is our general manager, Miyuki Williams. Good morning, Miyuki. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. Oh, I just realized I didn't unmute myself. Did I unmute myself?
Yes, you did. So we can hear you loud and clear and strong.
I did it better.
Go right ahead.
Interim general manager, happy to be here. And I know the listeners are thrilled that you secured such a guest of such high caliber as Dr. Mary Frances Phillips, who's doing a tremendous job. Thank you so much. Again, what she's talking about are tools or things that we can utilize in our own personal lives. What Dr. Phillips is talking about, the work of Ms. Huggins, talking about a blueprint or a toolkit that we can utilize as our own today, as we are fraught with a lot of different things that's going on in the world. And so not only is this informational, this show is also providing you with tools for healing, to make us better, to make us stronger. If this is something you've come to rely upon and appreciate from David Whetstone and We the People, please just take a moment and make a call to support to the show with this kind of information that you can use. 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739, WPFW-FM. If you're listening online, I'll get out of the way quickly. You can go right there to listen online, and you can go to the Donate Now button. And we also have Cash App, which is $WPFW-FM. Please indicate We the People. And finally, we have text WPFW-FM to 801-801. All this information is on our website, but meanwhile, please, you know the value of David Whetstone and We the People and WPFW. You understand the tremendous work Dr. Frances Phillips has taken a decade to produce for us. Please, we're celebrating a trailblazer in Black Panther Party and in social justice that's right in line with WPFW and what WPFW is about. We have $500 to go between now and noon. You can help us do that. Please go to 202-588-9739.
Thank you, Miyuki. And I will share with you that I've been grateful that we have longtime listeners. Erica Huggins came through the Washington, D.C. area. Many of the Black Panther women veterans were here about a year ago. And the tremendous connectivity that they displayed in communities like Baltimore, Washington, D.C., nearby counties in Maryland and Virginia. If you're a listener that is trying to deal with preserving your community, keeping it healthy and vital, particularly when it deals with young people and our elders, this is a topic for you. This is a topic for you to support. Again, you can do that by calling 1-800-222-9739. And I welcome and appreciate and thank both the new listeners and the longtime listeners who choose to support this and other shows right here at WPFW. Dr. Phillips, again, thank you for being with us. We've taken a deep dive into Erica Huggins' story. I want to pause again and just do some building blocks here. How should we understand the practice of spiritual wellness? And it really does align with whether it's some of the principles out of the 10 points with the Black Panther Party, but it's something that seems to be present in individuals among us who practice this to the benefit of not only themselves, but to all of us. What is spiritual wellness?
Yeah, so, you know, essentially, in a more shorthanded way, spiritual wellness is about wellness practices that engage the mind, the body, and the spirit, right? All of that needs to be in practice simultaneously. That looks different for different people. For Erica Huggins, that was turning to yoga, right? When she was incarcerated, one of her lawyers, Charles Gary, was a yogi. He was a yoga expert. He would do headstands before he went to court. So she turned to him and said, you know, can you give me a book on yoga? And he did. And she self-taught herself yoga and meditation. And she had to put that into practice at particular times because she was incarcerated and her time was not her own. So oftentimes she was squeezed in time where she could do her practice at most 30 minutes. And that sustained her, right? And so she's also doing her poses in these little tiny hallways, you know, as well. So she's making it work as best she can to keep herself calm, to keep herself clear, to keep herself conscious, aware, and really working on bringing herself peace during her incarceration. That also looked like helping and supporting the other women that she was incarcerated with and the kind of community building initiatives that she did when she got in the general population. When she did get her freedom, she continued those spiritual practices and indeed brought yoga and meditation to the children of the Black Panther Party's Oakland Community School. So you got these elementary school children that were indeed practicing yoga and meditation at the school. She also engaged in poetry. When she was coming up in Washington, D.C. in her family home, her father was very violent at times. He was in the military, right? He was a veteran. And so at times he took that anger that he was experiencing from the segregation and racism he experienced in the military, coupled with the racism and segregation he was experiencing as a veteran, right, being back home, and sometimes took it out on his family. So Erica turned to poetry as well, and that is some of the early beginnings of her spiritual wellness practices. And this is important to the history of the Black Panther Party because oftentimes the Panthers were attacked by the FBI, they were attacked by COINTELPRO, right? Many were, you know, do their activist work and serving the people. They will bury their comrades and get right to work. And Erica said, I need to build a spiritual container to keep me whole and well doing this service work on behalf of my community. And she did indeed do just that. You know, at some point, shortly after her incarceration, Bobby Seale, actually, who was on trial with her in Connecticut, when he got his freedom, he started a religious, or I should say more of a spiritual temple. It really wasn't more religious. It was more a spiritual temple, if you will, the Son of Man Temple. And this was all filling a void in the Black Panther Party, in the organization, filling that spiritual cup, if you will. But that looks different for others. You know, it could be, I talk about Audre Lorde and the power of her poetry and the power of her essays and writing, using what's at your disposal, right, to serve yourself and to serve your community.
And it's that latter part that is the two basic summary commitments of the Black Panther Party. And what we're doing in describing the life of Erica Huggins, we're also changing the narrative, and properly so. I'm old enough to know of the generation where mainstream media presented, you know, the Black Panther Party as mostly male, violent, irrational, so ideological that they didn't make sense. I mean, these were deliberate portrayals of the Panthers, and far afield from what they were doing, not only in the Bay Area and Oakland, but across the country as chapters developed.
Yes, yes.
And on that note, tell us a little bit more about the realities. You said that Erica Huggins was attracted to the Panthers while she was at Lincoln University. Mm-hmm. Who or what more do we need to know about the Black Panther Party? For instance, I believe that at most times the participation was predominantly by women, mm-hmm. but for everyone, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, women were the movers and shakers of the organization. When you go to the archives, women's hands are all over, you know, those archives. And so this book shifts that narrative from a masculinist orientation and places women at the center. So what does this organizing look like? you know, what were women's contributions? And so Erica is, you know, the story kind of comes through Erica, but there's other women's stories that comes out, other women, particularly in the Connecticut chapter of the Black Panther Party, that comes out as well. It was women running those community programs that many have heard about. When we think about the breakfast program, or when we think about the health clinics, or when we think about the free ambulance program, or the free shoe program, the free pest control program, I can go on and on and on. That's really the heartbeat of the Black Panther Party. And much of the work that Erica was doing was an extension of the Panthers' overall mission, agenda, if you will, when we think about the community programs, because they were to serve the body and soul of the people. So she was extending this work, right, for herself to survive in prison, but then also for her community. And through Erica's story and the women that I talk about in this book, we learned that your political commitment, your political engagement goes hand in hand with your community work. You cannot separate the two, right? There's an intersecting connection between the two. So she really expands our understanding of that and how the Panthers were always in concert and doing this work.
For the community and the phrases with one's whole body, soul, and mind, if I'm not mistaken. You know, we mentioned earlier that she took up yoga, and I believe the practice was the Hatha practice of yoga, which is really being aware of your physicality. I was also going to mention earlier too that Rosa Parks practiced yoga, and as well as Angela Davis. So again, this was not uncommon among people who are working and striving towards social justice.
No, and many of us don't know these stories. We don't know that Rosa Parks, and Stephanie Evans talks about this in her scholarship as well. We don't know that there's a history of Rosa Parks engaging in these wellness practices, teaching yoga classes. You know, we may not be as familiar with Angela Davis practicing these same kind of movement, movement poses, movement practices, what have you, during her incarceration, turning to Erica, leaning on Erica, getting inspiration from Erica as well, you know. And so there was these pockets, right, in the history of radicalism that was happening that I'm really bringing to the fore of the work, these pockets of activists engaging in wellness practices to sustain themselves, sustain their community.
And again, the reminder to us through your narrative is it wasn't self-contained and self-limited or self-constrained. It's for the benefit of everyone. So let's try to break that out a little bit. We mentioned earlier that Erica Huggins had a period of incarceration, I believe, 18 months? And that was in Connecticut at the state women's prison. Is it Niantic? Is that
the... It's Niantic. But today it's called the Janet York Correctional Facility. But at the time Erica was incarcerated, she referred to it as Niantic.
Yes, Niantic.
Because it's located in Niantic, Connecticut.
Not far from New Haven, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yep, not far at all.
Well, how did she get there? First, she, you know, went across the country and wound up in Los Angeles. She had met her husband, who was murdered, John Huggins, at Lincoln University. But they were assigned to do work in the Los Angeles area chapter of the Black Panther Party. And how she wound up in Connecticut shortly after the birth of her daughter, Mai, is indeed... a very tragic
story. Yeah, it is. So, you know, after John Huggins and Bunchy Carter was murdered by
on UCLA's campus, by the way.
On the campus of UCLA, she went to New Haven to bury his body. And she was approached while she was in New Haven to start a Black Panther Party chapter. So this is how she gets to New Haven. while she was when she started that Black Panther Party chapter, the FBI began to orchestrate a ploy against her again, and she was charged for murder, conspiracy, and kidnapping for another Black Panther Party member, Alex Rackley. And so this is what led to her incarceration and her battle for her freedom.
So in that period of incarceration, we learn many things about how women are treated by the carceral state by when they're relegated to prison. What were some of the conditions she and the other women, I understand several other Black Panther women, but also women from all different walks of life, primarily women of color, even though some European descendant women were in that prison too. What were some of the conditions there?
Well, Erica and the other Panthers that were incarcerated there were classified as political prisoners. For the first time in the history of Niantic at that time in 1969, they had these political prisoners and they didn't know what to do with them. And so it was a whole thing trying to figure out what to do with these Panthers.
What, because their ideas and their very words were so threatening?
Yeah. So their words were considered contraband. They did not want other prisoners to be around them, so they segregated them, right? So even when they would take the Panthers for a walk, right, they would at times shut down the whole prison, right? Or make sure those in the general population was isolated because they feared, they looked at the Panthers as a threat, potentially considering unrest. They thought, oh my God, you know, these prisoners are gonna protest or whatever the case with the Panthers being here. They had all kinds of things in their mind that really was tied to fear and this threat that they had around the Panthers. And so they kept them isolated. Those in the general population was not allowed to talk to Panthers, to the Black Panther Party women. Indeed, they did anyway. And those in the general population risked punishment to speak to the Black Panther Party women. They also protested in support of the Black Panther Party women as well. Whatever they could do to support the women, they did, you know, if it was giving them extra food for those who worked in the kitchen, you know, whatever it was, you know, there is a majority in my research of women that was incarcerated with the Panthers in the general population that supported the Panthers. But the Panthers were harassed, they were violated, they were abused, they were beat. You know, their mail was censored. They were treated in such unjust ways, being as they were classified as political prisoners. So, you know, what I mean by that is they are incarcerated for their political beliefs with that. And so, you know, they had to turn to each other to support each other. I mean, they didn't know what would happen from day to day. And, you know, they were violated beyond belief. And there's stories about this in a Black Panther Party newspaper. Oftentimes the Panther women would, you know, be interviewed in a Black Panther Party newspaper and would talk about their experiences of assault and harassment. From the littlest things as the correctional officers referring to the women incarcerated as girls, a way to belittle them, to more, you know, even more gross things is them beating them, you know, or taking away anything they had. They was always taking things away from them as a way to exert control over them and their bodies and what have you. So they experienced a lot of degradation when they was incarcerated.
And, you know, I mentioned earlier at the outset of the program that you have a particular practice as a historian. And when you talk about these list of abuses, it's not just relying on the interviews of the Black Panther women. Mm-mm. You look at the correctional records.
Yes.
You interviewed several guards. Mm-hmm. You looked at outside media. So I want to give people a sense of this is not stuff that's just made up off the top of our heads, but it's things that are pretty verifiable and they're our history. You cannot deny it. We need to deal with it. We need to, in some ways, engage it for the benefit of understanding that we can have a different and better world. Something that Erica Huggins was committed to, something that certainly many members of the Black Panthers Party was committed to, through all the misunderstanding and even the human missteps that occurred. This is what you establish by undertaking this work. Thank you. So we're going to just take a moment and do some housekeeping again. We are in a winter fund drive because we are a listener-supported station. We've managed to exist for more than 48 years in this month of broadcast, and that's due to faithful listeners. I've been keeping my eye on the tally page, but I haven't seen any movement. So I'm going
people
to
are
ask...
so engrossed on what you're saying and what Dr. Phillips. So seriously, people are engrossed in the story that she's telling. We have a captive audience. It's snow here in DC, and people are by the radios and they're listening and they're loving. And we appreciate this clinic that Dr. Francis Phillips is giving us about a life well lived, a life that took advantage and leveraged whatever position was she in for the betterment of herself and others. A life that we would not maybe not give all the details about. The lives of the women of Black Panthers are not as celebrated as those of the men. We hear a lot about Afeni Shakur, but after that, not a whole lot about the other women involved in the struggle. And women played a really important part in Dr. Mary France Phillips' book. Is a real insight into the political and the spiritual life struggle of Erica Huggins. And it's a really important effort. We're getting schooled on it this morning. And if this is the type of information you appreciate being able to get from David Whetstone, We the People, and WPFW, it is incumbent upon you to just take a minute. Just take a minute as you are, before you go shovel the snow or something, pick up a phone and think about how much WPFW means to you. You know the threats that are coming. They're going after right now. This administration is trying to develop a dictatorship, basically. And you know that we as a people, we as a working class, we as women, we as a people of struggle, we as African-American people, we to collectively, we are the majority. We are the power of what fuels this nation and this country. But we need platforms in order to educate, in order to act, to organize. And we can only do that with your support. 202-588-9739-1-800-222-9739 WPFWFM.org. Go to the donate now button. You can go to Cash App at $WPFWFM or go to text WPFWFM to 801-801. We are here only for your generosity. We would really appreciate someone getting us started. Again, we need $500 for people, who will invest $12.50 a month into WPFW. 4 sustaining memberships to 202-588-9739. 4 people who say, I will give up a popcorn and soda at the movies. I will give you parking in DC, a 1 hour of parking in DC, $12.50 per month, because this is important. This is part of my life. This is vital. 4 people doing that and we'll be at goal. Let's get back to this really intriguing conversation. I don't want to say much more other than please call 202-588-9739. Love Dr. Mary Frances Phillips. Love David Whetstone. Love WPFW. 202-588-9739.
Thank you, Miyuki Williams. We appreciate you as well. One more thing I would just like to add. Listeners, if you're a longtime listener, do this program and other programs an important service. Tell others. If we have more people listening, we can spread the responsibility and the share and the accountability to one another to bring you Jazz and Justice. Again, the goal is to build better communities one broadcast at a time, but it comes from a commitment over 48 years because you, the listener, choose to support the station. If you call 1-800-222-9739 for this program, tell the operator which program is for, and you can do that anytime for any of the programs on WPFW. Dr. Phillips, we've talked about the pathway, the odyssey of Erica Huggins. We're talking about the period of incarceration. What did she and others do to respond and to help one another and to build a community behind the walls of prison. The phrase sister love comes up quite a bit, and for good reasons.
Yeah, so she developed an organization during her incarceration called the Sister Love Collective with another young Puerto Rican sister. She was 16 at the time. Erica was 21 at the time. And they developed this organization to meet the spiritual, mental, social, and medical needs of women that were incarcerated with them. So one of the first things they did, which served as really the foundation of the organization, was develop a hair salon. A hair salon was developed to help these women feel good about themselves, particularly in an environment that is designed to strip you of your femininity and strip you of your humanity. And so they took their commissary and put it together and got, you know, the tools that they needed to do each other's hair. And over that hair doing was stories about life, about love, about their children, about revolution, about what they wanted the world to look like, about their needs. And maybe one sister saying, you know, I need to connect with my family. And Erica and Millie would take that information back and they would find ways to connect this particular person with their family. It may be, you know, a sister that came in the hair salon that was pregnant and she needs maternal clothes and she needs the kind of support. And so Erica would figure out a way to get that sister those maternal clothes. And so Erica would amplify her connections that she had, lawyers that she was in touch with, people that, there was one journalist that I talk about in a book, John Von Flattern, who actually served as the outside connection to the Sister Love. So she would be the person, Erica would write down her needs and the kinds of issues that, you know, she wanted Jan to figure out an address on behalf of these women. And she would write in a letter and that letter would get exchanged to Jan in the courtroom through Erica's lawyer at her trial.
Quite frankly, this was the backstop, the safety net, because there were a good number of pregnant women.
Yes.
And they were not treated very well. They did not get prenatal or postnatal care. Your book describes really some troubling medical conditions that were deliberately unattended. And
yes.
So she and Millie Rivera really did life-saving work, to be quite frank.
Yes, yes. And some of these women in the hair salon, Erica will only see once or maybe twice, only a couple of times. But, you know, that one encounter would save this woman's life, you know. They also redesigned their prison uniforms, right? They also developed a women's bail fund, right? So they developed all of these communities.
Drug rehabilitation.
Drug rehabilitation. Yeah. Through that was mentoring, where they're also, they turn to the wise ones in the group who would mentor the young prisoners as well. But yes, there was drug rehabilitation that they started as well, because those who came into the prison that were on drugs were not being treated properly, were not getting the proper medication. And so their rehabilitation program, if you will, was about care, was about support, was much more humane. And so they started that because they were learning that women were indeed dying. Like, they would have these women, you know, kind of
use the phrase go cold turkey.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they were literally dying. And I talk about this very vividly in the book, in the ways that Erica and Millie developed this program to support those women.
Dr. Phillips, I'm watching the clock, and of course I anticipate that listeners want to know about what Erica Huggins is doing now. You've mentioned there's a life after you know, the charges she faced, it was a declared mistrial.
Yes.
Am I getting that right?
You
so there's a life after that 18-month period of incarceration. A life with the Black Panther newspaper. being the executive director of the Oakland Community School, and displaying her concern about care for others, particularly in education, with the Alameda County Board of Education.
That's right.
What was, it's unfair to you, but in the 3 minutes or so we have left, what has life been for Erica Huggins after the her time in the Black Panther Party?
Well, Erica has lived a life fully committed to serving others and to fulfilling her dream. She always wanted to pursue education, and she has indeed did that, you know, as the Black Panther Party's director of the Oakland Community School. And then even after the Panthers was dismantled, she continued to work in the area of education and spirituality. You know, the work that she did with those who had HIV/AIDS in the 1990s and beyond, you know, with spirituality. All of that spiritual work helped her in the field of education. And today she is still speaking. She is still, you know, she also worked as a lecturer and was teaching classes at several universities. So she's still speaking and traveling and talking about the important work of the Black Panther Party and women's contributions in the organization. She also is very involved in restorative justice work.
And Dr. Phillips, you're speaking and traveling as well.
I
would just say, you know, there's always so much we can do in an hour. How can people find out more and get an extension of this conversation?
So you can visit my website, MaryFrancesPhillips.com. It has all of my upcoming speaking engagements on there, and also upcoming work on my next, you know, I'm already started working on my next book project as well. But yeah, all of that, my online presence is MaryFrancesPhillips.com.
And your in-person presence would be what?
And so I will actually be headed to Washington, D.C. next week. I will be headed to Politics and Prose next Saturday. I'll also be headed to Red Emma's next week. And so there is...
Red Emma's being in Baltimore. Let me shout out to my Charm City supporters.
Yes.
So, Dr. Phillips, it's a little bit early to thank you and to wish you well and your continued endeavors. But I want to thank you for telling us about Erica Huggins. People can begin to understand the importance of full participation, the fuller meaning of restorative justice by looking at Erica Huggins. And for that, we thank you. Mary Frances Phillips, her book again is Black Panther Woman, The Political and Spiritual Life of Erica Huggins. Take good care, Dr. Phillips. Interim General Manager Miyuki Williams is joining me again. I know we have a person to thank, William in Virginia. Thank you. Thank you so much for your support. Jeffrey in Rochester, New York. Thank you for your support. That shows you that people are listening on the internet, Miyuki, and they can make a donation at wpfwfm.org, but tell us more.
That's right. And the fact that Jeffrey Johnson is a new listener from Rochester, New York. Again, WPFW is local, national, and global. And if you've been listening online, if you are a captive here in Washington, D.C. because of the snow, please don't delay any longer. We've got 7 minutes remaining in this hour to hear from you. We have only $340 to go. We can get there if you go to the phones and call. It's been a fascinating conversation. It's been very, very chock full of information for our lives. David Whetson also always features the brightest minds and the boldest voices right here on We the People. He brings you scholars, activists, policymakers, and cultural figures who shape the world we live in. Today's guest was just phenomenal. She's just Dr. Mary Frances Phillips. The work that she's chronicled over the past decade. It took her a decade to get this detailed book of information, interviewing guards, interviewing other prisoners, interviewing other people to talk about Miss Erica Huggins. So please, if you appreciate this level, this high caliber level of work, this quality that's presented, this information that values and will enhance your life, will help you heal. I'm listening to what she's saying and saying, I need to go get yoga to calm myself down. And so if it inspires in any way to make better choices in your life, if WPFW has provided anything to you that you value that you don't want to be without, please, again, we just need four people. We'll need less than that now because we have other people who made just regular
pleasure. Yeah, $350 to go approximately.
That's right. So again, three people saying, making a commitment, $12.50 per hour. I mean, per month to the station would make all the difference in the world. David will make his goal. And again, this is two-way. David is a volunteer. All the research, all the prep, all the work that he does to present this one-hour show, he does for gratis. He does for love of the work, love of the listeners. So this is your opportunity to pay back, to give him something back and let him know how much you appreciate the great work he does. 202-588-9739.
1-800-222-9739. And Miyuki, I was going to interrupt you and say something. I think Jeffrey earlier up in Rochester, New York, he did something that's very interesting. I suspect there's a group that through his donation, he wants me to thank. I suspect these people have gotten together thanking the Glorious Express and whatever
glamorous,
that
is. Glamorous Express.
Glamorous.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
And he's also a new member, which is important, yes. Folks. New and sustaining members make the difference. It lightens the load.
And the renewals. But everyone, each of you make a difference. Mm-hmm. Each person who listening to the station who believes in WPFW and David, each of you make a difference. And you can make a difference now. Just need three more people to go to the phones, promise $12.50 a month to the station, and we can do this.
And I want to remind listeners, whether it's a show like Africa Now coming up at 1 with host Mumuza Mitali, African descended people, not only in the continent, but throughout the world, bringing the culture, history, and politics of them, or not forgetting the blues every noontime hour on Wednesdays. I had the pleasure of being followed and listening to Clarence the Blues Man Turner. And then throughout the day, 5 minutes before the hour, Sue Goodwin and the News Department and Public Affairs Department brings you the news. That's all empowered by your financial contribution and social connectivity to us. Both are needful. Both are very important. It is no accident to be here for 48 years and counting. And that is due to you, the listener, becoming a member of WPFW and Pacifica Radio. 1-800-222-9739. And if this program goes off the air, as it will in a few minutes, you need to go ahead and make that donation, because you can do that at any time at WPFWFM.org. Whether you call or go online, just identify the show you wish to support.
Thank you for a great show, Dave. I know people are going to call in and get you 340, so you'll make gold. 202-588-9739. It's been fun being with you.
And thank you. Take good care, everyone. Perhaps we'll meet again another time on the radio. Take good care.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for changemakers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Idols that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as
for close to 50 years, WPFW has amplified the voices, told the stories, and shared the history and culture of black people throughout the diaspora. In short, we are Black History. Black is WPFW.